Chase, and welcome to another episode of Case in Point, episode 58. Today I have our newest host, Kyle Davis, is with us today. Ponch is on assignment, and he is not able to join us this evening, but I do have a special guest today, my son, William Case.
Hi.
And we are just going to be doing some quick roundtable, a few points on Dragon Ball that I did not capture last episode. We're going to be talking about that today. And I actually don't remember what those points are, but we'll figure it out. There we are. And, predictably we would be doing, or I should say a predictable thing to do would have been to have a Christmas-themed episode, but everybody does that. And quite frankly, I didn't even set up maybe like a watch-along or anything like that. It's kind of hard to do Christmas episodes, but I think what we might do in that regard is it'll be a sub-discussion here, but I just wanted to maybe catch up with you, Kyle, a little bit on your escapades at the, your ventures at the Metro Center Mall.
So I bought a store. It was called, the store I bought was All For Anime. And I even offered to buy the owner his sign back, but apparently somebody purchased the sign out of memory. They thought he actually closed down his store permanently. He actually had moved over to another mall here. And so I went in there, and I went and met a bunch of people who were pulling apart other stores in the mall. And to be honest, I spent more time in a store I didn't even buy than the one I bought. I took a couple. They actually had a couple figurine stands. I took those, which I'll be mailing you. And then I took a display case. And the rest of the display, I literally left. I didn't even have time to get it. They gave us a time frame to get everything out of that mall. And unfortunately, it takes hours to disassemble stuff. We disassembled several stores. I did take a lot of cool pictures. Not every day do you get to go into a mega mall and be able to videotape and take pictures of it. I got to meet people and discuss with them, what they're going to be doing with the stuff that they purchased. It was amazing, sad, and like I was in awe of the place, and it's just not an everyday thing.
That must have been pretty surreal, because, and for those of you who aren't familiar, we just published our last episode. I just put that out a few days ago, but we're cranking on these. I'm going full steam, and we had touched on Kyle going into do a preview prior to purchasing items in Metro Center Mall, which was filmed scenes from Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. So it's kind of an iconic mall from a nostalgic standpoint. If I could talk right tonight, it was in Arizona, and just yet another chapter of our past for my generation at least. I did hear they're going to repurpose it. I think you said, Kyle, they're going to actually use some of the stores and kind of maybe cut it up a little bit. But I just want to touch back on that a little bit because, it's kind of a sad thing because, some of these malls, like I said, it was stuff that was in, when I was a kid, it was way out of reach. And from a money standpoint, it was like everything was really expensive. And your only other choice was like the discount chains, But the mall was something to me, malls in general were something to me, like back in the Northeast, like, when I was probably like when I was a teenager and everything, we had the, and Syracuse had, at that point, it's called Destiny USA at this point, but it was called the Carousel Center, and it was a three-story. There was a basement level, then there was the ground level, and then I think two more levels. So it was like four, I guess. And at the top was a carousel. And it's still there to this day. And lately I'd heard on that they were having some financial issues, obviously due to, you could blame COVID for things, but before that they were even having problems because, everybody knows that online shopping has really put a huge dent, in that kind of retail, so... At any rate, there was a few points on Dragon Ball that I was like, man, I should have hit those. and I don't remember what they are. It was actually regarding some of the actual of the TV show. And I think really what I wanted to hit on was that for me, that cartoon started, you know, I started watching it in 1996. And I think it was on WPIX, which was a station that we would get over in my neck of the woods when I was a teenager. And I remember it started on, I started watching it on when they were on Namek, and they had, which is technically end of season one, start of season two, if you go off the DVD sets and or Blu-ray sets at this point. But I have the DVD sets from 2006. And prior to that, you could buy them piecemeal under the original voice actors for the American production or translation of the show. And so, like, Vegeta's got a different voice. Frieza has a different voice. Most of the characters on there are different voice actors. And it wasn't until Christopher Sabat took over. He does the voice of Piccolo, and he does a ton of different voices on there. He does the narration for a lot, did narration for a lot of the advertisements for the upcoming releases and things like that. When you would get a VHS, you would get a DVD, or, you know, you would hear him kind of talking about, like, the Broly movie, like the original Broly movies. And so that's when I started watching. It was like 1996, and I was like, wow, this is cool. They got, like, these scouters that can read, you know, power levels of other characters and things. I thought it was really neat. So that's where it all started for me. And, you know, there wasn't a lot of merchandise out, at least in my area, for that. And it wasn't, didn't really start hitting the mainstream until about probably the late 90s and then maybe early 2000s. And I remember when I got the VHS set, it was a two-part set for the Trunks saga. That was really the high point. That was really neat. So, and I subsequently bought, like, the VHS box sets for the Buu saga, the Majin Buu saga, and also the Cell saga. And that's when it really, you know, took off. But most recently, I got caught up with the Dragon Ball Super series, which they've since dropped the Dragon Ball GT from canon because nobody likes it. And Dragon Ball Super takes over after Dragon Ball Z. And they kind of forget that that other stuff ever happened, like where Goku turns back into a kid, and which I thought was stupid. And
is Saiyan Man still around?
Yeah, because he was part of Dragon Ball Z, and unfortunately, I think that's stupid too. And I think that was a really lame storyline. I largely skipped that; it's totally pointless. And but hey, whatever. You know, I didn't write the show, so I would have done it differently. But yeah, no, they had a Dragon Ball Kai release, which took the American translation, and they cut out a lot of the fluff because it took so long for things to happen. In order to cater to the instant gratification, hyperactive crowd who has no patience for anything and doesn't appreciate story, they went ahead and, you know, for people that don't want to sit around and watch a full cut, they have this super duper trimmed down version called Dragon Ball Kai, and that's something I will largely ignore because I don't watch Dragon Ball because I'm in a hurry. I watch it because I like the show. So, you know, that's kind of my really, really brief appraisal and or at least my summary of my experience with the property. And I did watch the Dragon Ball movie, which, you know, if you don't take it as a, you know, a smash hit or expect it to be a masterpiece, I don't mind the film. I think it's the last film I ever saw Chow Yun-fat in, unless he was in I think he might have been in, the last film I saw him in was like the third Pirates of the Caribbean movie, or maybe it was the second Pirates of the Caribbean movie. But aside from that and that Dragon Ball movie, that was the last thing I saw him in. So that was kind of interesting as well. And, but yeah, at any rate, that's where we're at. And, that's kind of, you know, I think where I stopped, you know, I'm picking up and starting things over. I'm actually starting from the beginning of the series and refreshing myself so that I can watch all of the Dragon Ball Z stuff. I'm actually going back and I have the original Dragon Ball sets. And, you know, I got to tell you, they're a little weird. Some of the humor that's in there is kind of like, man, you guys are weird. You know, I just, some of the, it just, I am more of a Dragon Ball Z guy because it's all about like power levels and getting stronger and, you know, that kind of thing. And but the Dragon Ball stuff's a little bit more non. It's not really action based. It's more humor based, and it's okay, I guess. But I started watching those just to get a background because what happens is you know, it starts out where Goku's a little kid, and you know, it builds up to the point to where he's an adult and has a son of his own, Gohan. And then it will kick over to Dragon Ball Z. So I've never watched any of the Dragon Ball stuff prior to having the sets for myself. And that's what I'm going to be, you know, watching. And to where it actually starts where, like, Raditz comes in and, that you know, he comes to find out why Goku hasn't destroyed the Earth yet. So, because the way it works is that the young, they would send out Saiyan babies out, you know, out in the planets to plunder, you know, for natural resources. And so Goku was one of those kids that was supposed to go and land on planet Earth. They would see the moon and turn into a great ape, and they would destroy the planet and get it ready for extraction of natural resources. And so what happened was is that that did not happen. So they send Raditz, who is actually Goku's older brother and like twice the size of him, to go and figure out like what the heck's going on here, you know, checking the progress out. So that's kind of what's going on with that. And I'm getting refreshed on all that because it's been at least 10 or 15 years since I'd watched a lot of this stuff. You know, I my interest dropped off because, you know, they started doing the Dragon Ball Super stuff and all that, but and I wasn't sure about it. But now that I got kind of back into it, I got back into the SH Figuarts collections and stuff. Yeah, Kyle's smiling because I've turned my gaze onto this instead of the Masters, because Masters is done except for the retail line, which I'm keeping caught up with that as well as best I can. A lot of the releases are not really readily available in the stores, but that's a separate discussion. So yeah, I've been doing the figure art stuff, and Kyle was nice enough to send me a nice little care package, which I'll put up on the Twitter page and the Instagram page, and got me some neat stuff, and he was able to pick up King Piccolo for me, which is really cool. And comes with a ton of different accessories. And that's what I really like about the Figuarts are the accessories. And, you know, you might see, like, the root. They don't all follow the same price point. Some of them will be, depending on the size of the figure, like a Great Ape Vegeta, he was $180. That was the MSRP. And so, yeah, exactly. While your wallet gently weeps. And you know, a lot of the stuff, if you can catch the pre-order, it's not too bad. But if you're trying to play catch-up, you might, in some cases, depending on the popularity of the character, you might be paying a lot of money. So it's definitely one of those things that you want to stay caught up on if you can. As with any other toy line, and especially now in this day and age, their scalpers are all everything. Scalpers and bots, is. Those are the two worst.
Yeah,
I've been scouring stores, you know, looking for what I can of it, because Justin goes, hey, if you can find any of those SH figure arts, you know, let me know. And I've been, and the funny part is I've actually been finding a lot of the Dragon Ball. I'm like, I don't, you know, like, I haven't seen probably Dragon Ball in, oh, I don't know.
They're nice.
Years.
Yeah.
They're really nice, but.
And let's see, I think I stopped watching Dragon Ball Z, or the last time I watched it before life got too busy was probably about 15 years ago, Dragon Ball probably 20 years ago. Yeah, I keep finding him. I think I sent you a picture of one guy today. I do remember this guy, though, of the SH figure art I found. And you get to learn some cool little facts on him, because on the back of the boxes, it actually has information.
Yeah.
Today's hunt was through a store called Zia Records. They have always, you just never know what you can find in there, and they got tons of action figures. As Justin has about a million of them sitting on the wall there.
the wallpaper, and then, yeah.
and then the Lando. I always hunt the Lando Carizians.
For you. You're always finding, like, you found me this Galoob Star Wars thing. I didn't know they made this stuff. And it's got the Star Wars Heir to the Empire by Timothy Zahn. I have this paperback upstairs. And and it's the mini play sets. You open up the cover of the book, and it's hollowed out inside, and it's got, you know, it's got, like, I have to put a picture of this up on a webpage, but they're Star Wars Epic Collections, excuse me. Galoob was responsible for the Micro Machines craze, and so I would assume that this is part of, maybe, yeah, it even says Micro Machines on the back, but circa late 90s. Late 90s is what I call the dark era, the dark ages for toys, because they stopped, and the only reason I say that, not to disparage any toys that were made in the late 90s, but they weren't making Masters. They weren't make, you know, any Transformers they were making, it wasn't anything I was interested in. Also, G.I. Joe, they had crappy G.I. Joes, like G.I. Joe Extreme. Those are garbage. They're starting lineup figures. Their legs didn't move or anything. You couldn't really do a whole lot with them. So anyway, but yeah, it was really neat you found that, and you've always got a Lando to pull out of the hat, man. It's just amazing. Never ceases to amaze me. Another Lando item, you know. And then the really cool, the Black Series Empire Strikes Back, the 6-inch on the big card, which I just love these. And, you know, I didn't realize that this really looks like Ponch.
It does.
It does. It's got the mustache and everything.
I know.
Yeah, so next time he's on, it looks like Ponch.
I know.
You know, now that you show it, it does look like Ponch.
Yeah, this is a different sculpt than the original Black Series release that they put out. This is a different one.
About the Star Wars Galoob. When I saw it, I thought it was like a book with a bunch of pages and stuff.
That's like, what I thought. I was like, this is too light to be a book.
Like 500 pages or something. I'm like, whoa, that looks, the pages look like they're made out of cardboard or something.
Yeah, it's for just a flask of whiskey.
And there. Then I just open and I'm like, oh, it's not a book. It's a box with stuff in it.
That's my kind of book. I mean, that's got the perfect amount of pages that I personally can read.
It's appropriate too. It's a smuggler's book, and it has Han Solo on it.
Speaking of Star Wars books, though, you know, probably actually one of the only books I ever read. I've read, I think, 3 Star Wars books, and my favorite one actually came at your recommendation, which was Tales of the Bounty Hunter.
Yep.
That probably had the coolest stories, especially with now that you know, on The Mandalorian, Boba Fett comes back. That book had a really good tales of him, and then the also, you remember the, I can't remember the guy, the robot's name, but the assassin droid.
IG-8.
Yeah. And, you know, I didn't even realize it because I saw the book again and I was like, oh, I bet you there's a chapter on this. And IG-88's in The Mandalorian.
No.
It's IG-11. IG-11.
Oh, is it IG-11?
Yeah. So the way those droids work is that, see, here's the deal. By the time Mandalorian shows up, I'm trying to remember, that would be...
like, that, right after episode 6, you said.
Yeah. 5 years, I think, is that
right. After so IG-88 is long gone because in the books, which I don't know if they're considered canon now, but he merged with the Death Star computer.
And
that's what happened to him. And so he's long gone because the Death Star got destroyed. He merged with the original Death Star, I believe. And so, yeah, this is a different assassin droid. And, you know, there's one of the books that actually talks about, there's a production facility for these assassin droids where they make them in great numbers. So they're just the same model, just a different designation. So.
Gotcha. Yeah, once again, 3 books. I watched a lot of the movies. Yeah. I read more of the comic books for Star Wars. My favorite one was actually when Boba Fett actually pulled out a lightsaber and fought Darth Vader.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Yeah, that's the thing. That's the thing is I like that because
when he was trying
I get so tired of what's that? Kyle, what'd you say?
I was just saying the other one where Jaster Fett, who's the guy who trained Jango Fett, who's Boba Fett's, you know, clone daddy.
Gotcha. Well, here's the thing is, I like the idea of Boba Fett having a lightsaber and fighting Vader because I think in a way that it kind of sticks it to the Jedi-only crowd. I am so sick and tired of people that complain if there's no Jedi in something that's Star Wars. There is no rule that says you have to have a Jedi in everything that's Star Wars. It's crap. Okay? I like having some bounty hunters for a change. You get sick of the... look at what they did. You know what? And there's a spoiler on the last episode of Mandalorian. I don't care if you haven't watched it, it's your fault. Okay? So spoiler alert, people. They couldn't resist having freaking Luke Skywalker come in there and mow everybody down. And that is a prime reason why you do not have these guys in every episode, because they're overpowered. They take a story and just flush it down the toilet. Oh, okay, yang, they're done. That's stupid.
Yeah.
It's a waste. Okay? So I'm glad that we had some people that are a little bit more realistic that get by with grit, being resourceful, enduring intense pain, and making the hard choices. A Jedi, very, very minimal of any of those things that they have to go through. Okay? Because they're able to go through and ying, and they're done.
Yeah.
You know, you've got a... Yeah, it's like you can move stuff with the Force. You've got a lightsaber. You could jump up high, super speed. I mean, it's ridiculous. Quite frankly, I was tired of it because you got so many of them. You know, seeing Boba Fett and the Mandalorian come off this ship together off of Slave One. They're both wearing the full helmets and everything. Totally nerded me out. This is the greatest moment. For me, as a Star Wars fan ever, was seeing that. And I don't say that lightly.
Boba Fett was my all-time favorite. And I'll say this. It was his candor and his body armor. Like, just the way he acted.
Exactly.
And his body armor was just like, it was just the coolest thing they could have ever done to the Star Wars franchise. And then, I don't know if you've ever, I'm pretty sure you have, because you watch all the bonus footages. But George Lucas liked him so much that he had a bonus clip of him surviving the Sarlacc. Is it the Sarlacc pit?
Yeah, Sarlacc pit, yeah.
He survives it, and he comes out, and his armor is discarded in the sand as he walks away. And,
right.
That bonus clip was there, and then he decided, I'm not going to put this in the movie because I don't want to confuse anyone. And we're like, you made everybody think you killed the coolest character of the whole thing. I mean, I liked everybody else, and I liked the original series. But Boba Fett was the guy who like really sink it in when I watched it. And I mean, I know that those original movies came out way before I was around, but that Boba Fett was probably just by far the favorite. And so when the Mandalorian came out, that nerded me out because it was you know, Mandalorian.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And Mandalorian's what like a lot of fans have wanted, but the number one, never thought it would happen. Number two, because a lot of people hated the movies, they never really thought that that character would actually make it to the small screen. I mean, think about it. The last 20 years, we didn't, you know, the majority of that, we didn't have streaming services, okay? We didn't have a pandemic where these studios have decided, hey, we're going to make sure we get these done because nobody's going to the movies. And, you know, it's too far in between. And even that aside, it's so far in between films that Star Wars has to keep putting stuff out if they're going to be competitive in the entertainment market. Because right now, the time is ripe for, I don't consider Star Wars science fiction, okay? It's not. It's action. It's space action type film.
Yeah.
And TV. Sci-fi to me is highly, like Star Trek is sci-fi to me, because am I going to get in a big debate? I'm sure there's a lot of people that want to rip their scabs off because I even said that, okay? But what I'm trying to say is that I, you know, Star Wars is something that to me is action based, and, you know, Star Trek is more, well, at least traditionally, Star Trek was more scientifically based, because you're talking about a Thaleron radiation and Polaron, Tetrion, disruptors, phasers, you know, all that stuff is made, you know, it's kind of a speculative technology used in the show, you know, and that's the thing. So,
well, and it's also, you know, Star Trek is, they're exploring space. They're straight up exploring space. They run into guys like Q, and, you know, they run into all these different things, and, you know, everything is new to them. As whereas in the Star Wars universe, everything's already happened. You know, there's no surprises. And that's where I agree with you that it's more of a space action, even though it's awesome. I love Star Wars. I love both series.
Oh, sure.
But Star Trek has a lot more intellectual pieces put together into it. And Star Wars has more of, we've already done all the smart stuff. Everybody's smart. Let's go shoot some things and let's make an action show. And
well, then, even George Lucas said, he goes, the focus isn't on the vehicles and the technology, it's on the characters. And
right.
It's about the people. And that's the thing is, like, you can go and pick up a Star Wars blueprints book. I actually have them. I've got blueprints of the Death Star, okay? And TIE Fighters, you name it. I have all that stuff. But the thing is, with Star Trek, like you said, I mean, it's all about, like, not only is it the scientific aspects of it, it's also the engineering aspect. Science and engineering, you know. And, you know, you have chief engineers that are talking about, like, you know, I need to recalibrate the upper pylon on level 2 and that kind of stuff. Either of them, and I like them a lot, so.
A lot of those, you know, I got into a lot of those shows, you know, based on... originally I'm from Alaska, so it's cold and snowy or rainy, half, you know, 90% of the year. And so there's not much to do. You know, if you wanted to go outside and get dirty, you could. I did that a lot, too, but I like to stay inside. And the biggest thing that I think that really won me over on that stuff was, I don't know if you remember this, but the Nintendo 64 came out with a game featuring Dash Rendar. Who is also
Shadows of the Empire.
Shadows of the Empire. And that game made me really want to dive into the Star Wars universe. And because it built a world of wonder. It's like, oh, they, you know, it's not just here's a storyline and the movie ends. It was, hey, that show was the movie was so good. Let's make an entire universe. And then the other thing that bummed me out was they go, yeah, this is, you know, canon is going to do with this, and you know, we're going to, you know, like what Disney did. Disney denounced the whole, Disney's like, yeah, we're going to denounce everything just foolish. Because and I was like no, you know, like personally, like I don't care what you say, I liked the new Star Wars movies, but on a side note, I do think they kind of just took the old storyline and redid it just with new characters.
Well, you know, that's the easy button, the low-hanging fruit.
I played Call of Duty forever, Call of Duty's great game. I'm the sucker who buys it every year. But when you, that's all they do, because it saves them time, because they only have a year to work on it in order to release the next one, because they release one every year, so they don't change their maps, they just change what they look like.
Gotcha. Yeah, I mean, you know, I actually have Shadows of the Empire for the 64, and it's pretty fun, I gotta tell you. And I read the book too. I mean, Jody, my buddy Jody, who's been on the show here before, he let me back in the late 90s. He let me borrow the book. I read it and got it back to him much later than I should have. But the book is great, and I read the book and I was like, man, they should have made a movie out of this. These guys are idiots for not, you know, doing something with this. And, you know, but they, you know, that whole thing, it found its life in the video games and the comic books and the toys, things of that nature. So, I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah, the Nintendo 64 is where it all started for me. On that, and then plus you kind of got to explore their world, the going through the ships of Star Wars. I've always loved the stormtroopers and everything from. Honestly, I wonder how he came up with the uniforms he did, or like how he designed them and came about with them.
Yeah, I don't know, because usually that's a costume designer that actually. What they'll do is they'll throw something together and bring it before George and see what he says. I like that. Here, change that. Yeah, the collar here, it's a little, you know. I don't know. That was my horse for attempt at doing George Lucas's voice, but. What's that? What's that,
they
Will?
They did a really good job on the Mandalorian armor, too.
Yeah, the Beskar?
Yeah.
I really liked it. Yeah, you know, I'm still 50-50 with what they did with when Boba Fett repainted his armor. I don't know why
they did that. I mean, yeah. I guess maybe he decided he was going to do it, like rebuild it or something, I guess. And
yeah.
He went and found an intergalactic Home Depot and got some flat spray paint and decided to rattle can it. You know,
well,
what it looked like.
I mean, there's one of the theories I heard was, you know, he was a prompt. Now, the one thing is, it's weird that nobody really knew who he was in Mandalorian, especially when he was the most prominent bounty hunter, which would explain why he never took care of his armor. Because if he was, you know, the most prominent bounty hunter for the Empire, you know, he didn't necessarily have all the time in the world to, you know, maintain his armor, and now that he finally has it back and he has downtime on his hands, he was able to maintain his armor, because like his father Jango Fett always had nice and shiny armor, and so that was one of the theories I heard. The other thing though is, once again, the whole the whole reset, because I remember in the comic books, Boba Fett makes a mention that the reason he hasn't done he's never maintained his armor was because he shows what he goes through. You know, he gruels and crawls through all his missions. You know, he goes through it and he wears his battle scars proudly.
Right.
There's a comic on, it's right after the Empire falls or toward the end of the Empire collapsing. A captain of a Star Destroyer, of a crashed Star Destroyer, had asked him, hey, can you go to my office on the Star Destroyer and retrieve a box for me? And so Boba Fett flies to this destroyed Star Destroyer, goes on board, you know, the security system. He has to battle these droids. He has to go through. He gets to the captain's quarters, grabs the box, comes back, and it's a last message from the captain's wife. And the captain goes, I'm not going to pay you, Boba Fett, and Boba Fett goes, well, you know what happens when you don't pay me. And the guy goes, yes, I'm well aware. I just wanted to see this message one last time. And then Boba Fett takes his blaster and shoots the guy. But the mission he went through just to obtain the one object was, you know, he was fighting those big battle droids and those, the security systems on Star Destroyers. And it's just pretty cool to see, you know, the stuff he goes through, how well trained he is, you know, the comments he's made, like he's like, you're not the only one. When he tells Darth Vader, when he fights Darth Vader with a lightsaber, he goes, you're not the only one who's killed a Jedi. Because if you do follow his story, he does actually kill quite a few of them.
Do you think Jango Fett's armor was made out of Beskar?
Yes, his armor. So. Jango Fett's armor was an upgrade. So Jango Fett's teacher was Jaster Fett. Jaster Fett was, I think he was a leader of one of the sides during the Mandalorian Civil Wars. He takes a cannon through the chest and pretty much dies. And one of his old armor suits is what Jango takes, which is what Boba Fett's armor was.
Right. So when he touches on that and. If you watch The Mandalorian, it was the episode before the last one. I can't believe it. He actually explains it on the show.
Yeah, and
when,
it's cool
when challenged.
Like,
yeah.
Because a lot of people, when they watch the movies, they're like, well, Jango Fett wore that blue armor. Well, in the books, he actually wore the green armor until he left the Mandalore Wars. When he left the Civil War, that's when he changed his armor to the blue armor. He actually wore what Boba Fett wore for the majority of the Mandalore Civil Wars, and then when he left, he changed his armor to blue.
Well, I thought it was interesting when Bo-Katan challenged him and questioned him about his origins and not being a Mandalorian, and pretty much he's just like, you know what, close enough because of this, this, and this, so I am qualified to wear this. I thought that was great. And, you know, I gotta say that Jango Fett was a guy that he was one of the bright spots of episode 2.
Yeah.
And he's one of the only reasons I even watched that film, because of the battle scenes between him and Obi-Wan. And then, of course, the Jedi scene at the, you know, towards the end and stuff. But yeah. I could do without the romance garbage, the Corellian hair floating in the air. Who cares about that junk?
I know.
and the Clone Wars was so, you know, I was so excited to see the clone troopers and how they came about, because, you know, in the original Star Wars movie, you know, Luke Skywalker goes, you know, my father, you fought in the Clone Wars with him, and right. Prior, because obviously that movie had, there were no books out, there was nothing to touch base on what the Clone Wars were,
right?
You know what I mean? And so then it gave them the opportunity to actually explain what happened with the Clone Wars and do what they did. And that was pretty exciting. But George Lucas, I forget the gentleman's name he had. So because obviously if you watch the original trilogy and then you watch the episode 1, 2, and 3, you can see that they're completely done pretty much different than how it ever was done. The guy who was working with George Lucas wanted to keep it more serious and more to the same way that episode 4, 5, and 6 were done. And so him and George Lucas kind of had a falling out. He left the show, and then they brought in these other guys, and that's where they kind of made it kind of goofy. You know, you got the Jar Jar Binks character. I will say this. Now, I could be wrong, but Darth Maul is one of the only few people to ever kill Liam Neeson on screen, which is...
well, he's a Darth Maul's a fantastic...
No, you know? and
he was driven by pure rage. I mean, everything about him was pure rage.
And the best... I'll say this. The best part about the Star Wars universe is they made so many cool characters. They kill them off, and then people are like, oh, no. And they find a way to bring them back, because... Obviously, they make it so that he survives, you know, being cut in half and thrown down that tube.
They were going to take that character off the... There's a video you can watch with Ray Park where he talks about that. And there were plans to bring that character that from the Clone Wars cartoon that has the robotic legs and put him on the actual, quote-unquote, live action screen, which I thought was great. And I'd have to dig into that more to really firm up because I'd have to revisit it so I could give an accurate summary of what that is. But I was like, why didn't they do that? And it's like, I mean, he showed up at the end of Solo. I know this is morphed into a Star Wars thing all of a sudden. I mean, we were jacking all over. Guys, we're all over the map tonight. And, you know, but I guess really to wrap this up, this segment on this is, I think that was a mistake not doing that, not bringing him back in. And I really would have liked to have seen another Han Solo film. There were rumors of a trilogy, and I would love to have seen two more movies out of that. You know,
I would have too. I would have really enjoyed it, because
it's a great film.
Well, especially with what they can do nowadays. You know, I'll say this, what they have done with The Mandalorian has put it back to its original, you know, Star Wars original roots of, you know, being serious and following a storyline. I think that's what makes The Mandalorian so much better than what most of the movie, you know, I mean, seriously, The Mandalorian trumps the last three movies that came out.
It trumps everything. It trumps everything.
Yeah.
And I think it's because it went back to being, you know, a serious show following a storyline, just like the original trilogy did. And I think that's kind of what made it really successful. And I'm really excited to see. And it looks like they're following the storyline, like the Black Saber. When I saw the Grand Moff, when he held the saber, I was like,
Moff Gideon.
I know exactly. Yeah, I was like, I knew exactly what's going to go on this. And obviously, I'm more of a Mandalore nut than most others, because I actually went, you know, read up about it, and I think it's exciting.
I think it's great that I'm glad that he didn't get killed off, Moff Gideon, because he's too cool of a character, man. You can keep these people around, man. Have them come back and, you know, get revenge, or at least try to get revenge. And these are cool characters, you know?
Yeah.
And, but yeah, I mean, so yeah, I think that that was a fantastic conclusion to that season, at least. And, you know, I'm going to say, I've said this before, I'm going to say it again. For crying out loud, give us more than, you know, how many episodes was it? 15 or was it 14 or what was it?
I think it was 15.
I mean, come on, guys. You know, TV shows, I know this is a streaming platform, but so what? Typically, TV shows, you're going to get like 30 episodes, or even like for a pilot season, you might get 15 to see, to test the waters, check it out. But, you know, a lot of cases, you're getting at least double that, if not more. I mean, for a whole season of shows, and not even that it's been established as something successful. Give us more stuff. I mean, actors used to really have to put in a lot of work and work crazy hours to look, the guys on Star Trek. I mean, it's like, whether it be Next Generation or the original series or whatever, it's like, look at the amount of episodes we got per season. These people were, they would work 18-hour days, if not more, to get scenes filmed. And now it's piddly.
Yeah, it's much easier to do it. And it's actually 16 episodes for the entire Mandalore season 1 and 2.
Yeah, that's a half or maybe a third of what you used to get for TV shows.
Right.
And not only the TV. Yeah.
And it's in such demand, too.
Yeah, it's not like they didn't know this was going to be a hot thing, you know. But anyway, I'm not disparaging them. This is not a specific problem with Mandalorian. It's across the board for streaming services. And I just don't care for it. Because, like, Picard sucked. And that, you know, they wasted a lot of episodes in trash, and I didn't like that series, except for the last episode where frickin' Riker shows up with that fleet of Inquisition-class starships, and, you know, I was like, all right, finally, here's real Star Trek here. You've got Riker brought back, you know, and everything. It was going to be awesome, and then they ended it, and it's just like, let's get rid of that crap. Let's bring back what people want. They want frickin' Trek back. Okay.
Yeah.
And the other thing is that I don't even like Discovery very much now. I liked it when Pike was there, because he's all about running a starship and doing it by the book. And now you've got a bunch of these crybaby, insubordinate that are stuck in the crew of the Discovery. And Saru has the horrible task of keeping them in line when they don't follow orders. And then his butt when he has to go explain it to the Admiral. You know, and quite frankly, I think he should kick Michael Burnham off the ship. She should be kicked out of Starfleet. She's mutinied twice.
Right.
She got out of jail free card last time, you know, in season 1. And it's just like, you know, that lady shouldn't even be on the ship. Let her help from an independent standpoint. I like the character, but I don't like the fact that she continually is insubordinate. And
I agree. There's sometimes they did something and they take it too far. Like, it was cool the first time, you know, you got this renegade, but when you can see it coming, it takes the fun away. You know what I mean? It's like,
you know, she's going to be like, go behind their back and not tell her that it's the ask forgiveness later policy they're running with. And I have problems with that, because the whole point of Star Trek is to, okay, you've got your orders, you go and you're doing the mission, and then you run across something that really isn't in the book. It's not in the instruction manual for being a Starfleet officer. And then you have to make a point on the fly. This is different, where they've already made their minds up before they even go on the mission that they're going to disobey orders and do it their own way, which is what you were saying. And it sucks. I hate that crap.
But, I think, you know, I think maybe next time we should do a little bit more on the Dragon Ball Z and a little bit of the Star Trek, because I just finished the Discovery. I think that would be a good topic for the next one.
Yeah, we'll do that. And I, You know, I've kind of been shotgunning around, but I just want to do a quick little segment here before we wrap things up. I want to let Will go first. My son Will's on the show with us tonight, and I was asking you, what's your favorite Christmas memory so far?
Probably when I just wake up and then I just get excited for Christmas morning.
What's your favorite present so far that you've ever gotten that you remember?
Probably this Roblox museum set.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah.
We never did find that code for that.
No, it was the zombie one that you got from my birthday.
Oh, okay. Well, they get these little codes you can scratch off and get in-game items, and I never found the tab. Anyway, yeah, it sucks because that was a big playset. And so, what about you, Kyle?
Ever for the best Christmas?
Yeah, ever, because you're an elder statesman at this point.
Yeah, it's let's see. Geez, now I got to think years ago to modern day. I mean, to be honest,
it can be recent.
Well, I'll say recent hasn't happened yet. I mean, I have a newborn daughter. She's going to be 7 months old now, and
already that is
so. So obviously that's going to trump my prior experience. But before that happens, and before that trumps my prior experience, I remember when we were, when I was younger, we were raised by my grandparents up in Alaska. And I'd probably just say there is, like, when we got this huge, it was this table game that can be air hockey, pool, or like ping pong. It was like 10 games in one. And it was just the coolest thing. And then the next best thing on that
was that the Fisher Price tournament table.
I think so. Yeah. that was back in the 90s.
Yeah, that's the Fisher Price tournament table.
And we just thought it was so cool. And then me and my brother got a set of wiffle balls and wiffle bats, and we were huge baseball. We were huge baseball fans. So we made our own baseball rosters. My brother was a huge Ken Griffey Jr. fan, and I was a Jeff Bagwell fan. And then
what about a Buff Bagwell fan? Were you? No, just kidding.
Yeah.
I'm Buff, and I'm the stuff.
And then the nerdiness started about 3 months after Christmas, actually, when my neighbors sold us their computer. And then that's when Warcraft and Starcraft came into play.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
That's a story for another time, though. But yeah, that's my favorite. That's my favorite Christmas memory. What about you, Justin?
I would say probably I would have to say, you know, just from a gift receiving perspective, my favorite one at least comes to mind right now. It might be something later, but I mean, the biggest memory I had was getting a Sega Genesis. And so my brother and I we unwrapped a Ken Griffey Ken Griffey Jr. baseball. Was the Sega game, and it had him on there. So then the cat was out of the bag, because we're like, we were smart enough to know, hey, we're 11 years old. Hey, we already got this game. We know there's a system in here somewhere. My mom wouldn't be that foolish. And so I got so excited. I went in the bathroom and threw up, and which is something that everyone's like, I can't believe you. You went and threw up, man. That was unbelievable. I was so excited. And so sure enough, we got that one. It came with Sonic the Hedgehog 2, and it was a smaller Sega that was only like half size, and you could slide the Sega CD on the end, whereas the original system, you could stack it on top, right? Yeah. You could stack the Sega CD on top. It was real bulky. This was real streamlined, and I just remember loving Sonic the Hedgehog 2 with my brother. We played that game like nonstop, even though we got other games for it, and that Cal Ripken Jr. baseball game was unlicensed. So it was licensed by the Major League Baseball Players Association, much like the Brett Hull Hockey Sega game was. And there was a team on there called the All Cals, and there's Cal Ripken Jr. played every position, even though in no reality he wasn't a catcher and he wasn't like first base. You know, it was really funny, and you could be unstoppable, you know.
Cal Ripken Jr., wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, he was a stud in his day too.
Oh yeah, no, he's fantastic. And so yeah, so that's my probably at least what comes to mind. My most memorable Christmas morning is from a gift perspective was getting a Sega because it was a brand new video game system. Yeah, so there you go. And what I'd like to do is I neglected to do this at the beginning of the show was do some housekeeping, as some podcasters are wont to calling it. But I just want to say check there are a few podcasts to check out. I like the Howard Hughes podcast a lot, and he's a guy over in the UK. He's a journalist by trade, but he's been holed up in his apartment because of the restrictions on coronavirus. So I want to give him props. He doesn't know I exist, but he's got a really cool show. Seems to be like a really cool host, and they get some nutcases on there, but lately he's been getting some pretty credible people on there that bring up a lot of topics, paranormal topics, historical topics, you name it, across the board. The guy covers all the bases. So, but yeah, cherry pick that one. He's got some weird people, but there's a lot of really good ones on there too. So, but yeah, the McSauce podcast, always great friends of this show. I was on an episode of theirs, and that was a lot of fun. And we'll be doing another one in that similar vein here soon. And then a Fireside Chat podcast for Ryan McCormick. He's an intense guy. He's a kindred spirit of mine. He's a really cool dude. And he's been on this show here, and I've been on his. And so check those out, too. And Element of Surprise with Chadwick Sewitt. I haven't been in contact with him lately because I don't use Facebook as much. But at one point, we had talked about doing guesting on a show. He's a funny guy. They were doing some Back to the Future trivia way back, and I piped in on that, so that was cool. And so check him out. There's the Hope This Finds You Well. They're a fantastic show. Those guys are really funny. There's some other shows I need to put on here in the future, and I want to write those down so that I actually get them all. Because quite frankly, I've been up since. The Wii, when it's still dark outside. I've had a long day, so doing a better job of the housekeeping segment so I can remember all the podcasts I should be putting on there. So anyway, I hope everyone has a great Christmas and a happy new year. Yes. And eat lots of brownies, drink eggnog, and make yourself sick, because that's how you really enjoy the holidays. If you get a 10-pound yes. bag of sunflower seeds and throw them up on Christmas morning like I did when I was 8 years old, when I was my son's age, that's how you know you're enjoying your holidays, is when you get sick from overconsumption. Yes. And, yeah. So, thank you again, Kyle, for joining me from the great state of Arizona. I sound like Art Bell now, you know. And thank you, Will, for being on the show with us.
Yes.
My big mouth and my constant chattering. He didn't get a chance to really talk, but you will in the next episode.
Yes.
And I'm showing William the ropes of how to podcast, even though I'm not an expert. Okay,
yeah.
I'm doing it my way, you know.
Yeah.
But anyway, all right, folks. So yeah, you guys have a good, happy Christmas, and a Merry New Year.
Merry Christmas.
Yes. Merry Christmas, Charlie Brown, and we will see you guys next time.